Happy Saturday.
That's Beth Guggenberger chiming in already with a happy Saturday.
Happy, happy Saturday. I mean, we're like full-fledged into September.
It's fall.
I've worn a jacket a couple times. I'm ready to put my boots on. I ordered my cord of wood already.
You had commented a couple of weeks ago you couldn't wait for the leaves to change. It's beginning.
I mean, I got a little hot cider. It's a radically different fall than I've ever had, listeners, for the last 16 years, and I am embracing the Midwestern fall. I just had my first apple fritter.
The first one ever?
I mean, ever. Where was I growing up? I have no idea, but I'd never had an apple fritter.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, that's like that, you haven't even lived until you've had some warm apple fritter.
And you won't live long if you eat a bunch of them, because those things were like, they were, you know, ridiculously delicious. But
they are ridiculous. I mean, that is a good thing about fall. You usually get some pretty good, like, food, you know.
Soup.
Well, you know, that's fine.
Chili.
Stew, chili, you know, all that kind of stuff that you don't eat in the summer because you just sweat to death,
you
know.
You have things like watermelon.
So, you know, yeah, these are fall foods.
I think so, too. Speaking of fall, I'm going to go this week up to Dallas to speak at the D6 conference.
By the way, it's down to Dallas now because you live in Cincinnati.
You're right.
Up to Dallas when you're in Monterey, but it's down.
I'm going down to Dallas, and I'm just a
fan. What is it? What is it for?
It's a conference called the D6.
The D6. Oh, yeah, sure.
And I would encourage people to look that up online if you're in the Dallas area. We'd love for you to join us. But I just like Texas. I don't know. I'm just going to say that
well,
out loud for all our Texans.
I just like Texas.
I think that Texas is a really fun place to anticipate going to visit because, you know, everybody's friendly.
Yeah.
They got lots of good bling going on, so it's very, like, you know, stimulating to the eye when you walk around.
Okay.
And they're just a warm people in general, the entire state. So I'm looking forward
every
to visiting
person,
you.
Every person. Like, so if I go to Texas, it will be the odd thing if I run into somebody who doesn't say hello or isn't.
They weren't born there.
They
came from New Jersey to get a taste of the sunshine, and they haven't quite acclimated. Because
gotcha.
Every Texan I've ever met is very, very nice.
Wow.
Including our sound engineer, I'm just saying.
That's exactly right, Ken.
I'm telling you. He
is the most patient man on the planet.
They're just nice there.
Okay. All right. That's quite an endorsement. An entire state endorsed.
Okay. Well, anyway.
Right there. So what is the D6 conference anyway?
It comes from the passage in Deuteronomy 6 that says that we are to teach our children the principles that God instills to us. And it's the idea that I know this. Lots of people are talking about this these days, but we cannot subcontract our children's spiritual growth and formation. Mm. We're not even in church every Sunday as it is. And even if we are in church, maybe your kid is getting 30 minutes to 45 minutes of instruction, and they're getting it one on a whole classroom. They're not even getting it one-on-one. And you, on the other hand, are with your child all the time, many, many times in one-on-one situations. And it is our responsibility as parents to take to instill into the next generation our personal value system. So I'm going to go be a part of that whole movement and talk about teaching your kids about missions and I'm going to talk a little bit about the role of intimacy in marriage.
Wow.
I know, I'm kind of like...
You're just all over the
place.
I'm
well-versed this week.
Yeah.
I'm going to be all over the place.
You know, you brought up this thing about instilling in our children our values and those things. It's an interesting thing. It happens every year. I've mentioned before, I work in a Christian school, Cincinnati Hills Christian Academy.
Mm-hmm.
And every year, the shift from 8th to 9th grade is a big one. Like, should I go to high school here? Or there's a lot of great parochial schools in Cincinnati. Should I go there? And it's amazing to me how many parents at this age, when their kids are 14 years old, and it's cool. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily do it, and I'm not passing judgment, I guess. But I am amazed at how many parents let their kids decide where they're going to go to high school. And I get the whole giving kids responsibility thing, but it just seems like a huge decision for a 14-year-old to make. And it almost does seem like what you're talking, that you're giving them the responsibility for how they might choose to.
And they're picking, like, my friend goes to
this school. That's exactly right, or they got a good football team or whatever. And so, I mean, there's all kinds of reasons why kids might do that, but... So anyway, you just said that and it kind of struck a chord with me.
Oh, I had a conversation with my sister-in-law this weekend. There's a book written by the Harris twins called Do the Hard Thing.
I would just like to say real quickly, I probably just lost my job there just by mentioning, like, what are you doing talking about that? It's just one of those things, you know, and it happens at every school everywhere. So.
You're offline. You can say whatever you want.
Oh, okay, right. Okay, anyway, sorry to interrupt.
Anyway, in this book, Do Hard Things, which is written by the Harris brothers,
yeah, sure.
they say that there's no such word as teenager, that we made up that word that really we are to be as appropriately responsible for our actions as possible at every stage of the game. That we kind of use the word teenager as an excuse, and that kids hide behind it. Like, I'm not fully matured yet, or I haven't totally developed, or haven't grown, therefore I'm not responsible for my actions. And so that might be the other side of that conversation, that maybe there's somehow some sweet, beautiful tipping balance where perfect middle ground, where we say to a kid, you know what, you're probably older than you're giving yourself credit for, and yet we still
it's
like
the
to
hard,
be.
I tell people all the time, as a former middle school principal, it's the hardest transition there is from being sort of that pre-adolescent to being a young adult. And it is hard to figure out when is it appropriate to tell and when is it appropriate to allow. Mm-hmm. And so there's got to be some middle ground in there. I just think your child's education is an important thing, and so you may not want to let them just allow them to choose. And I'm not suggesting that everybody does
well,
that.
You and
but
I are
as compared to what color would you like to be your room to be?
Yes.
That
yes.
might be something you would allow them to.
Yes. Well, I think, you know, you and I talk a lot about kind of the generationals and the millennials and the boomers and all those things. And I think it will be very interesting as we watch this next generation, you know, enter the workforce. And they've been given this ability to make all kinds of choices. I mean, today is all about choices. There's not just one set path. And we're cheerleading them along the way so that we don't hurt their self-esteem.
Yeah.
And we're telling them they're great at things they may not really be great at. And at the end of the day, what will be the result of that? Those parenting styles? I mean, time will only be our teller.
Yeah. I could go so many ways with that conversation, but it's probably better.
We transition.
Just to transition. We got a good show today. That's a good transition to have right now. We got two really compelling authors. Cecil Murphy is going to be with us in the next segment. He's won a bazillion awards. He's a well-known writer. He's written a book called...
Not Quite Healed.
Not Quite Healed. It's kind of a PG-13 segment, so I'll give all of our parents out there a heads up. It's about survivors, male survivors of sexual abuse. And he's made this a part of his life here in the last several years, about speaking and writing about this topic, which often goes unspoken about. And then...
Can I say something
about
it? One thing I felt often compelling about that book is it's not just for people who have that as a part of their storyline.
True.
It's also for people who don't want to have that as a part of their storyline, because he talks about what's going through the mind of the perpetrator and some of the ways in which our children are vulnerable that we don't even realize they're vulnerable. And so it's a very cautionary tale. If you could learn a lot of things that would help you protect your children from becoming victims by listening to his segment.
Right. And then Elisa Morgan is gonna join us. She's the former CEO of MOPS. Many of our listeners know about MOPS. And she's the former CEO. She's written a book called Is There Beauty in Being Broken? And so I know that she's a compelling speaker, interesting writer. You've met her before.
Very authentic. I'm excited.
Person.
I've been wanting her to be on for a whole year, so this is very exciting.
Man.
Here she is.
What's taken us so long?
Well, she just got a new book out, so here she is talking about the beauty of broken. It's the most vulnerable description I've heard a Christian leader use in talking about what was happening in her life as her star was rising.
Wow. So. Okay, well, that'll be great. Anything else happening here in the last minute before our break? Anything
coming
big going
up is
on?
Homecoming. And so this is the first year I've been at my high school homecoming
game
in like 20
years.
That's
right. Your kids are now enrolled at your alma mater.
I'm going to dig out some old sweatshirt. I'm going to put my bangs really high.
Oh, my
I'm
gosh.
Going to peg my jeans and put on a fluorescent sweatshirt and just pretend like it's back in 1991.
You know, it's a fun time of year. It's also, I find, again, being around a school, now working in a high school, it's also a very tense time of year. Like, who's gonna ask me? Will they say yes to a dance? Or if they say no, I mean, it's just all those sort of
what am I gonna wear?
Hurdles to, like, you know, I got to figure out how to do this formal thing. More and more kids are not even asking. They're just going with groups of friends, which I think is a bummer. I mean, this is how you learn sort of to treat other people with respect, to treat a date with respect, or how you respond in a more formal event instead of just making everything just a casual thing. So if you're out there and your kids are listening or whatever, encourage them. Ask somebody, you know, take
you don't
that
hear
leap.
That every day.
Take that leap. Learn some courage to do
Dr.
that.
Dr. Hall's got some opinions this morning. Stay tuned after the break.
Hey, this is Real Life with Beth and Rob. We'll see you in just 60 seconds.
This past summer, I went on a back-to-back mission trip to India where I met a little girl named Shailaja from an orphanage with back-to-back. She was a new child at the home and was having a hard time adjusting. As I began playing with her and painting her nails, I was reminded that this little girl was just like my sisters back at home in the United States. Instead of a face on a photo, she became a part of my family when I realized that I could continue to help her through Back-to-Back's child sponsorship program. Even though she lives over 8,000 miles away, through the Back-to-Back sponsorship program, I can ensure that her spiritual, physical, educational, emotional, and social needs are met. The best part about the program is when I come home from school and find a letter from Shailaja. I am so thankful for God working within both of our hearts in order to lead us closer to each other and closer to Him. Visit www.backtoback.org for more information.
Welcome back. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob. I'm Rob Hall, along with Beth Guckenberger. We hope you're having a fabulous, awesome Saturday.
Happy
end of
Saturday.
September. I mean, that's a beautiful, perfect time.
Depending on where you are in the country, you might have a turtleneck on right now.
Yeah, I just love fall. It's my favorite season.
Hmm.
So, and I don't say that much. I got a little soft there.
I like that.
Yeah, it's my favorite time of year. So we hope you're having a great Saturday wherever you happen to be. Great show today. Two really great, compelling authors. Cecil Murphy is going to be with us first. He's written 135 books. That alone is crazy. 135 books, including the bestsellers 90 Minutes in Heaven with Don Piper and Gifted Hands, The Ben Carson Story with Dr. Ben Carson. He's just sold millions of books. He's going to be talking about something in particular, and as I mentioned in the first segment, it's kind of a PG-13 segment. We're going to be talking about some rather intimate things, some things that have to do with male survivors of sexual abuse and even prevention of that happening. And so, you know, you might want to pick up the show on iTunes later if you've got some little ones in the car. So fair warning there. So,
well, thank you. Thank you, Cecil, for being with us this morning.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Oh, absolutely.
Will you tell us a little bit about kind of what prompted you to write this book and who you had in your mind's eye as you were crafting it?
Well, I am a survivor of sexual assault and lived in denial, but what's called often selected amnesia for many years. I was 51 before I really began to get in touch with my sexual abuse and realized not only how it affected me, but affected my wife and other people. And I realized that there are a lot of men out there who really need to hear this message. A lot of men out there hurting and don't know how to talk about it.
Yeah, and you mentioned, even in the first chapter, you talk about that there are lots of different timetables, right? That this isn't just the same kind of process at the same time for every survivor. Why do you imply that survivors are not completely healed? That would be an interesting question.
Good question. And one of the reasons is simply that, it's part of us. It's something that's going to be there, and we can grow from it. We can learn from it. All right, for instance, you mentioned earlier that I've written 135 books. That's true. You know, on one hand, it sounds like, wow, that's great, but I will tell you something. That's compulsion. That's somebody not normal. Anybody who writes 135 books, there's got to be something abnormal about them, and that's who I was. You know, I felt worthless, useless. And so one of the ways I was trying to prove myself to myself, unconsciously, of course, was to be an overachiever. And you see, that's what happened. That, you know, I've gotten in touch with that now. I'm still writing, but the reason behind it is different. The other thing is I keep finding new areas that have been affected by that theft of my childhood.
What are some of the, you know, when you use the phrase childhood sexual abuse or a male survivor of childhood sexual abuse, there's all kinds of thoughts that come into someone's mind. What do you think are the most common misconceptions about that?
Well, there are a lot of them. And yeah, from a survivor's point of view, we're afraid they're going to think there's something wrong with us, that we might really be gay or that we ask for it. And I think those are common misconceptions, certainly on the part of the survivors. Mm-hmm. And too many people seem to think that just being abused in childhood, especially if it's early, you forget it and it doesn't matter. But it does matter, and it affects our whole attitude in life.
Mm-hmm. One of the things as I was reading through, and I'm not quite healed, was the idea of lies and how lies become such a part of the fabric of our mind and our thoughts that they drive our actions. Could you talk a little bit about lies that maybe someone would believe? And so,
the biggest one, of course, for most of us is we don't really feel like that we're real men. We won't say that, but that's how we feel. We don't know exactly what a real man is, but we struggle with masculinity. We feel like we're different. We don't seem to understand that why we are who we are and why and we feel different. And see, most of us feel bad, a lot of shame, not realizing that something bad was done to us. And so because of those kind of negative feelings, we tend to think that way, but we can't talk about it. I mean, who can go up and say, hey, how are you? My name's Cease. I feel worthless.
Mm-hmm. Now, you talk, it's interesting you bring that up, this idea of silence, that it's kind of hard to talk about. But I think it's probably even more difficult for men or boys to speak about their experience. Why do you think that is?
Well, there's no question about it. Officially, one in three girls were sexually assaulted. Officially, it's one in six. But because men don't talk about it, it's probably about the same. And I've already mentioned a couple of them. We're afraid that people will think we're gay. The other thing is, you know, as males, we have this macho image, and so we say to ourselves, well, if I were a real man, I would have fought him off. I mean, we were children. We didn't know any better. But we get confused in thinking what we should be instead of the fact that we were just innocent, naive kids. And most of us, Rob and Beth, were kids who didn't feel loved. And not to say our parents may or may not have loved us, it's that we didn't feel their love. And so we were open prey to anybody.
I was saying in the first segment, as we were getting our audience ready for your time with us, that you talk about in the book a little bit about what does make a child vulnerable to this kind of thing, and how what we could do if this is not a part of our storyline or someone in our family storyline, but we want to take preventative measures in order to protect our families. What are some advice that you would give, or things that would help us keep our children from being vulnerable?
Sure. The best thing, Beth, is for parents to not just love their children, to make sure those kids know they're loved and wanted and cared for. I'm currently working on a book with a woman who survived sex trafficking three times and now is a really dynamic Christian. And she said that these predators seize on these kids. They can tell by the way they walk, the way they talk. They are so vulnerable. Look, God created us to be loved. And if we don't get love from the significant people in our lives, we will be open to whatever is just false love from anybody who comes up and befriends us. They make us think we're special or that they really care about us.
Hmm. Now, in Not Quite Healed, you also give 40 truths for male survivors. Can you share a few of those that you consider most important?
Well, I think some of the most important ones, is that we have to learn to forgive those who hurt us, and it's very hard for these people that in many ways we could say they ruined our lives. We also have to be able to trust. Mm. You know, trust is the most difficult thing of all, Rob. We, the people we probably should have been able to trust, could be a relative, a minister, a scout leader, and a plenty of cases of that now. These were people who, by every measure of society, ought to be trustworthy, and because they violated us, it's hard for us to trust, and particularly if they were a minister or a priest, you know, that represents God to minds of children, and a lot of men just cannot even talk about God or the church because it was a minister who abused them. So those are some of the things that are just really so important. And another thing is we need somebody who will just listen to us. Listen, not change us, not correct us, not throw Bible verses at us. There's an appropriate place for Bible verses, but just to be there to love us and support us.
What advice would you have for our listening audience if they were suspect that someone that they cared about was on one side of that equation or the other? Was either someone who was being abused or someone who is a perpetrator? What role do we play as the larger Christian body in entering into those stories?
Well, I think the one thing we don't do is ignore it. I don't think we need to go out on an investigation trip, but if we have this strong feeling, I think we need to take some steps to find out if the person was violated or is being abused, or if this person is doing the abusing. I think you have to be very careful, and certainly it's not to be accusative, but if somebody is being abused, this child's life is in danger. I'm not just talking about physical danger. I'm talking about this child's life can be ruined by someone like that.
Yeah. Now, I know that, you've mentioned earlier, and you're open about the fact that you're a survivor of abuse as well, and I assume that the writing of the book was part of that healing process for you. What kind of encouragement would you give to our audience members that's either dealing with this or is coming to terms with this happening in their lives or the lives of someone they love?
Well, you certainly need somebody to talk to. By the way, I have a blog called menshatteringthesilence.blogspot.com. Mm-hmm. menshatteringthesilence.blogspot.com. It's an absolutely safe blog, and a lot of people open themselves, or if they want to, they can email me. Just Google my name, Cecil Murphy, and email me. I'm glad to talk to them. Sometimes just to talk to another survivor is so helpful. I probably having personal correspondence with about 20 men right now who are really struggling with this. And one of the things we've also realized, by the way, is that for some reason, the men who live in denial, most of them start coming out and talking about it somewhere between their late 30s and early 50s. I fit into that category. Gary Rowe helped me write this book. He fits into that category. And we just learned that recently.
Interesting. Now, I know that you're very active in social media. In addition to menshatteringthesilence.blogspot.com, what are some other ways that people can either find out of the book or connect with what you're doing in social media?
Well, just Google my name and you can find out some things about me. One of the things, I'm a former pastor and a former missionary, and one of the things that I'd like to do is to write on subjects about people who hurt. These kinds of areas where people want to change and want to grow. And I don't play with just simple kinds of easy steps, because change is not easy, it's painful, but I assure you it's worth it.
Yeah. Well, Cecil, thank you so much for being on the show, talking about such a difficult topic that, as you said, too many people stay silent about. We just so appreciate you taking the time to write and to be on the show with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me as your guest. God
Absolutely.
Bless.
Blessings to you.
I was just thinking about the role that wives play as husbands. If it's really not coming out to their 40s and 50s, these men have had a whole life at that point. Mm-hmm. They have possibly raised a family or been married. And so what is the wife's responsibility in the midst of that conversation, to be gracious and compassionate and loving?
And again, I can't help but think, again, of people listening to the show, and it may not be for them, but it may be for someone that they know. And so if that's the case for you, you can hear all of our shows at robinbeth.com or on iTunes at Robin Beth. You can find us there too. Just some great stuff. It's something that people don't talk about normally, and mm-hmm. so it's a chance for people to spur a conversation where they might have been silent before. So, hey, we're going to continue this kind of conversation with Elisa Morgan. She's the former CEO of MOPS. She's written a book called "Is There Beauty in Being Broken?" Just a really authentic and personal story about her life as she was kind of shooting up the ranks in Christendom, and you'll want to hear it. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Do you have a family member who's getting older and can no longer be safely left alone? Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care, assists senior citizens and adults to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Visiting Angels has over 400 franchised locations across the nation. Experienced, compassionate caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meal preparation, and light housework up to 24 hours a day. Rates are affordable, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. Visiting Angels has cared for hundreds of thousands of seniors nationwide. Franchises are available. Call Visiting Angels toll-free today at 877-374-LIVE. To find an office near you, visit www.visitingangels.com. For home care for your loved ones, call Visiting Angels now at 877-374-LIVE. That's Visiting Angels, America's choice in home care at 877-374-LIVE.
He found shelter under the rock and lay there looking at the stars. God, do you remember me? In Tales of the Not Forgotten by Beth Guckenberger, Joel dares to ask for what he can't have. Serafina sacrifices what she can't afford to give. Abram looks for an answer buried out of reach, and Christina, saved by a mission, searches for her own. Follow these life-changing stories as they take you on a journey to faraway lands and unfamiliar faces. Travel through their challenges and see the hand of the great story weaver writing endings you'd never imagine. These are the tales of the ones the world doesn't see, tales of the not forgotten. In Tales of the Not Forgotten, learn how God is the great story weaver, weaving the threads of our lives into a strong and beautiful sign of His love. Check out Tales of the Not Forgotten book and missions materials by Beth Guckenberger. For more information or to purchase, go to your local Christian supplier or visit standardpub.com. See lives transformed.
If becoming or staying debt-free is important to you, you're not alone. 10 years ago, I was worried sick, overwhelmed with debt, and so tired of not having enough at the end of the month to make ends meet. I was working a full-time job, but getting deeper in debt every month, and I hated being away from my children. I finally said, that's enough, and I made a decision to do whatever it took to get free from the terrible debt that was causing me so much stress. I'm Gina Neef, and I want to invite you to find the same financial freedom that I found. Not only did I pay my way out of debt, I was also able to leave my corporate job and work from home and be completely available to my family. For years now, I've worked part-time hours, making more than a full-time job would ever pay. I remember the pain of being in over my head, and I'll never forget the joy of becoming debt-free. That's why I show others how to do the same. If you're ready to work from home and find financial freedom, then I'm eager to show you how. Go to findingfreedomnow.com. Discover how you can get free from debt. Go to findingfreedomnow.com.
Last October, I went on a back-to-back mission trip to Nigeria, where I had a chance to meet the boy I sponsored through back-to-back. The moment I met him, it became real that Jeremiah was not just a boy in a picture. He was a boy with dreams, hopes, and a story just like my own kids. At that moment, I saw how back-to-back is changing the lives of orphans around the world. I realized that in the same way I'm here for my children to be part of their stories, I can also be part of Jeremiah's. In the same way that my children can be a brother or sister to each other, they can care for Jeremiah. They can write him letters and share their stories as they grow up. We can help him to receive an education and food to fill his stomach, but more importantly, we can be involved in his life and encourage him to follow his dreams. I learned that sponsoring a child through back-to-back is not just about financial support for an orphan. It is about allowing God to intertwine your story and your heart with a child in need. For more information on sponsoring an orphan like Jeremiah through back-to-back, contact 513-754-0300 or email at childsponsorship@back2back.org.
Everybody, we hope you're having a fabulous Saturday morning.
Happy Saturday.
This is Real Life with Beth and Rob. I'm Rob Hall. That's Beth Guckenberger. End of September. Lots of great things going on.
Football, fall.
Any of those things.
I know. I love it. I'm excited about our guest. I told you in the first segment, I wanted her on for a year.
I was just going to say, you wanted her on for a year. I'm like, we could have arranged it. I mean, you're a part of this show. You're basically the show.
Well, I had an experience with Elisa, which let's just welcome her to the show and then I'll say
absolutely.
It right in front of her. Elisa, welcome to Real Life with Beth and Rob.
Hey, guys. It's so good to be with you. I'm a year older now, so that's it.
Right. Hey, just to kind of orient everybody, Elisa is one of Christianity Today's top 50 women influencing the church and culture as a You're a speaker, a leader, author on mothering, spiritual formation, evangelism. You are the former CEO of MOPS International. In the middle of all that, you had time to write a book.
Yeah, you know, it's a neat season. It's a season of great freedom, and I'm very grateful for it. You know, being under a mantle of leadership, which y'all know about, with MOPS for 20 years was sacred, but it's awesome, too, to be under only the mantle right now of God. Mm. And my voice is freed up to go in places that weren't quite open to me before, so mm. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Elisa, about a year ago now, I was speaking at a leadership conference where you were, and I quite vulnerably shared on the stage that I was 1 week away from a foster daughter running away from my home, and how it's hard to pretend like everything's okay when everything was okay in my home. And I wasn't sure how well that was going to be received, and people on stages are supposed to have everything all together, and they wanted me to show a picture, you know, behind me of all of us at the Christmas tree, and I wasn't feeling like that. And as soon as I stepped off the stage and I went back into the bathroom, you met me back there and told me a little bit about your story and just encouraged me that it doesn't always look that way, and that there's that God is with us in the middle of our storylines. And so anyway, I'm so happy to hear that you put out The Beauty of Broken, which is a little bit more about your story. So would you start by telling our listeners a little bit about what motivated you to tell about the broken places in your life?
Yeah, I come from a broken family, like many, many people. My original family was broken through divorce and alcoholism specifically. My brother's gay. I spent lots of years trying to figure out what that means for me and for him as a believer. And so when I became a Christian about age 16 and then on in marrying my fabulous husband, I truly felt like I was going to make a perfectly intact second family, no matter what. You know, mm-hmm. it was going to turn mm-hmm. out beyond breakage. And at the same time, Evan and I were both in full-time Christian work, graduates at seminary. You know, we had Jesus time with our kids, you name it. And when my daughter revealed that she was pregnant as a teen, and when I saw my son get caught in just the barbed wire of addiction and substance abuse, and then we began to struggle with other issues. My daughter became pregnant a second time. We lost a grandchild. Blah, 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 on and on. I found that my second family fell and broke, and despite my best, I still come from a broken family.
One of the things that one of the things that I appreciate is just how much that doesn't appear to be rattling your faith, that you can be in that reality and still be passionately in love with Jesus and not feel like he failed you. Because many of us, as the things fall apart in our life, you know, we're looking for someone to blame, and the easiest target is the God who's supposed to be in control and blessing us in the midst of it. How is it that you maintained your faith muscle in the midst of some of those really hard stories?
Well, I just had to kind of, you know, fall apart into tiny little pieces myself, bottom line. I think we've swallowed, and me specifically, a myth that there's such a thing as a perfect family. And if we do perfect things with our perfect children, we're going to have a perfect result. And that's not at all what God, I think, intends. And in fact, we all come from broken families because God's family was broken. I mean, beginning with Adam and Eve, mm-hmm. and extending forward in Scripture, we see case after case of family after family who's disobedient. You start tracing your finger through the very human stories in Scripture, you find out that in many cases, God uses somebody more after they have fallen than even before, you know, whether it's David or Peter. We go on through huge illustrations. And I look at me and I think, the stuff that I've been through, wow, what a myth. You know, we think it disqualifies us, when in reality, it further qualifies us when we put it into God's hands. I mean, I know a lot about moms of preschoolers because I didn't expect it, but I ended up with another one in my own home. And mm-hmm. and I know what it's like to walk into a correctional facility and do an inmate visitation because I've done that to go see a loved one. And I know what it's like to sit with somebody who struggled with homosexuality because one of my family members does. You know, it's just like, it's not beyond God. He's mm-hmm. so present in the middle of this, and mm-hmm. in fact, he puts our pieces back together instead of sweeping us up and throwing us away.
You know, you talk about just beyond that things are broken. You talk about that you believe that is exactly where God wanted you, and really wants all of us. At what point did you come to that realization? And I'm assuming that once you did, it resulted in some really great freedom for you.
Yeah, everything was perfect. No, see, when I really came to grips with it, honestly, was probably, I'd say, 7 months, 6 months into my daughter's first pregnancy. So pretty early on, I had, like, tripled my therapy sessions to get help through this process. And I thought I was trying to embrace my daughter's sinfulness, you know? Mm-hmm. And what God brought me to is the story of the sinful woman. Don't you love that? Wouldn't you love that to be your, you know, your, you know?
Yeah, my life verse.
Yeah. Anyway, from Luke 7. And as I read and read and read and read that passage of Scripture that God would not let me out of, I began to see that I didn't have access to his love because I didn't have access to admitting that I was messed up, that I was sinful. Brendan Manning says that, you know, when we pretend we've been a sinner, we can only pretend that we can be forgiven. Mm-hmm. And that was so me. I mean, I had done it right. You know, I was not going to be a drunk. I was not going to get divorced. I was going to do it right, unlike my parents. And so when my kids made different choices, I felt like, well, they were screwed up. And God had to topple my pride that, okay, I hadn't done those things over there, this, that, and the other. But I had done plenty of other things in my heart. And that's where I found the real hope of going, you know what? I'm not any better than anybody else.
Yeah. And tell me about, like, your husband is walking this journey with you. And at least I know in my own story, you know, we have different moments of epiphanies and the pits. And so what was it like to share a story like your family's story with a life partner? How has this journey affected your relationship with him?
Sounds like the call dropped, but hopefully we'll be able to reconnect with her. Just a compelling story. I'm looking forward to reconnecting with her and just about what it was like to actually come clean, I guess, in front of people like you did.
She's the president of MOPS. I mean, right. Are you kidding me? She knows how to do it right from the very beginning, and here she is telling the whole wide world A plus B does not always equal C, mm-hmm. and how to still love Jesus and your family in the midst of it. That's probably what most resonates with me, because we all are just so desperate to have the great product at the end, and she's saying it's more about the process and the faith and relationship you have in the midst of it.
Right. What was it like for you? I mean, you talked about your story of being on stage. Ah, Ken whispers in my ear that Elisa is back.
Okay, I'm back.
Hey, all right.
The beauty is broken.
Yeah.
I was just asking right before we got disconnected about how this storyline impacted your relationship with your husband, because at different points you had to have been growing and ebbing and flowing through your faith at different places and at different times.
Yeah, very honest. You know, Evan and I are very different. He comes from a home that looked kind of all perfect Christian on the outside, different from mine. And so during this season of watching our children struggle and take different routes, we both had to do a lot of work. I had to do work about my pride, and he had to do work with going, oh, my gosh, this is not outside of God's work for regular Christian families. And, you know, abnormal is pretty much normal in God's hands. And, you know, he had to realize that he had missed things in his original family, too, and that God was still so present. And we handled things very differently. In this book that I've written, I have one particular chapter called Partnership on how he had to step aside in his own faith and figure out where was God in this. And what happened to me is that I realized I had this kind of admiral of all kind of response. You know, a mom is supposed to be the in charge one of her family. And I found that my let's fix this, let's invest deeply in this as a mom, I ended up pushing him out. And pushing away from myself the very help that God had for me and my husband. It's as if I thought I could do it better.
Elisa, I hope you can join us after the break.
Happy to.
Great. Hey, we're talking with Elisa Morgan about her new book, The Beauty of Broken, My Story and Likely Yours Too. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob. We'll be back in just 60 seconds. We'll be right back.
Who's Weaving Your Story? The Story Weaver series by Beth Guckenberger highlights the plight of orphans throughout the world in personal, heart-grabbing stories of loss, struggle, and redemption. The kind of redemption only God, the great story weaver, can accomplish. Written for ages 8 and up, Tales of the Not Forgotten and Tales of the Defended Ones reveal God's ability to create a story far greater than we can imagine. And the corresponding 6-part Leader's Guides on CD help turn each book's content into a simple yet powerful 6-week curriculum for any church or small group. Use both together and you have a 12-week curriculum full of fun activities, compelling stories, biblical teaching, and practical applications. Let God weave your story and see what He can accomplish for orphans worldwide. The Story Weaver series is published by Standard Publishing and is available at www.standardpub.com or your favorite Christian bookstore.
Hey, welcome back. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob. I'm Rob Hall. That's Beth Guckenberger. We hope you're having a great Saturday morning.
Good morning.
You happen to be, that you're enjoying this end of summer, beginning of fall time.
We like to have conversations that inspire you throughout the day, and I think this conversation we're having with Elisa is absolutely a part of that, this idea of what does the real stuff of life look like.
Absolutely. And I guess as we go into this last segment, Elisa, I want to know if you have any reservations about sharing your story.
Yeah. You know, it's really hard to be as vulnerable as I felt God called me to be in this book. I've always been vulnerable. I mean, one of my mantras is vulnerability is believability. I don't think anybody's helped by seeing some fake view of what it's like to be a follower of Christ, of, you know, just the plastic bow on the top of the box kind of a thing. It doesn't help anybody. We're helped more when we watch somebody fall down and then see them get back up in faith. That's what really encourages us. That's true mentorship. However, to be this honest is very humiliating and very humbling. And right. I would find myself with my laptop just, you know, pouring out this particular, I call them Brooklyn family values, or the next one, or the next one. And I'd stop and I'd go, no way, God, you want me to say that? And there it was. And, you know, just time after time, I would choose to say it, to say it, to say it. And that's the story that's coming back. I mean, I start off my talks often going, how many of you have, you're a child of addiction, you're a child of divorce, you have a daughter who became pregnant as a teen, and then a second time, you have a child who is an addiction, you've relinquished a child through adoption, you've adopted, you have somebody gay in your family, you have been to see somebody in prison who's in your family, blah, 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 blah. And then I say, I've done every single one of those things. And it's really humbling, but it's so freeing for people, because within the body of Christ, we throw ourselves out. One of the illustrations I use is of an antique china collection that was housed in a wall on my home, falling off that wall. And all of the contents broke. And it was in the season when I feel like everything was falling off of the walls in my home. And that's what I want to say, is that God, I just went and swept up the mess and threw it away. But God doesn't do that with us. You know, he tenderly reassembles and redeems and shows us that there's beauty in the broken in our lives, whether it's by our own hand or by the hand of someone else.
I was speaking at an adoption conference recently, and I was being vulnerable about my relationship that has hot moments and cold moments with my foster daughter, one of my foster daughters. And I had someone in particular in my mind when I was sharing. I realized that my comments might be misunderstood, in fact, even judged by a large portion of the audience, but I wasn't talking to them. I was talking to the small population who felt like they were all by themselves, that adoption is supposed to be this beautiful, gorgeous storyline, and if theirs is not like that, and I didn't really care about anybody else. And so I'm curious, as you are writing The Beauty of Broken, who is it that you're writing for? Who is it that you're hoping picks this book up and really takes the message to heart?
Every single human who has been in a family or has a family, because getting caught in that mythology that we can do it right, we carry around such a burden of shame as a result, because I don't care who you are or how your family breaks, it's going to break in some way, shape, or form.
even despite your best efforts. And then we carry around so much shame. 2 Corinthians 7:10 is one of my current favorite verses, where it talks about that godly sorrow yields or leads to repentance that leads to salvation and leaves no regret. But worldly sorrow leads to death. And worldly sorrow is shame. If I am a stinky poo, nothing good here. And that is not how God made us. He fully sees who we are and wants to redeem us, reform us into his best idea of who we always could become, even through brokenness. My other favorite verse is Psalm 34:5. Those who look to him are radiant. They will no longer cover their faces with shame. And so when we come into whatever it is, whether we form a family through adoption or through natural process or however, that we're ready, we're geared up for the inevitability of our own brokenness and those who are going to be broken with us in our family. And that God who's the answer to it, too.
Absolutely. Well, I just really appreciate your, as you said, your vulnerability is so central to your message and certainly to your book. And so where can we send our listeners to find the book, The Beauty of Broken?
Oh, thank you. They can get it anywhere, Amazon, Christian Booksellers, Barnes & Nobles, et cetera, or at elisamorgan.com, ELISAMorgan.com. And there's a great video as well that they can take a look at just for personal encouragement. It's like a minute and a half right on the website. We would just love to encourage you, however you're struggling in your family. Mm-hmm.
Hey, before we jump off, Elisa, tell them a little bit about Fulfill and how they could find out a little bit more about that particular venture.
Absolutely. And Beth has written for us, and we're so grateful for your voice there, Beth. Fulfill is a digizine. It's a digital ministry for women of every age and stage in life and leadership. And we really want to empower women to live out their influence. So we have a digizine library of about 10 issues that are media-rich issues, and they're thematic. The one that Beth wrote for most recently is on courage. We have one coming out in October on forgiveness. But all kinds, nice girls, how to solve conflict, valleys, you name it. And then every week we send out a blog called The Weekly Refill. It's all free. Everything's free. So it's Fulfill, F-U-L-L-F-I-L-L, fill yourself so that you can fill others.org. Just go there and sign up, and you can get everything you need for free.
Thanks. Thank you for that, and thanks for being with us this morning. We appreciate it, as I'm sure our listeners do, too.
Absolutely.
We believe in you guys so much, and Beth, much love to you, and God's
Amen.
Best for you and your broken family like mine.
Amen. Amen. Thanks, Elisa.
Thanks, Elisa.
I just, I think her vulnerability is believability. I hope that you listeners, I know you haven't interfaced with her personally the way I have, but I hope you feel like you got to know her a little bit and you understand through that, getting to know her, her message that, only God is in control of our families. We cannot, and like I said at the beginning, I mean, she's like the MOPS president. If there was a way to figure out how to do it right, she would have figured it out. Mm-hmm. And
she worked hard to try to figure it out.
Absolutely.
And just kind of came to the end and said, that's ridiculous. I mean, why do I continue to pretend that I have it all together?
She and I had an offline conversation about the difference between being responsible for our children and being responsible to our children. And how she got in trouble when her adolescent children began to make choices that she tried to become responsible for. Mm-hmm. But she was not. She had to release herself and realize that they are in their own little broken journeys heading towards their own Messiah. And it was her job to just be responsible to listen to them, to love them, to offer them unconditional grace, to be merciful, to stand beside them.
You know, two great, talk about vulnerability, two great stories today. Cecil Murphy, not quite healed, was on in the previous segment, and then Elisa as well. The thing that I really appreciate about them both is I think they're more into telling their story than providing answers to people.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just something authentic about that. We don't really necessarily want to be preached at about how broken we are, but to hear somebody else's story and be encouraged by that.
Mm-hmm.
Allows us to enter into that conversation where the other perhaps pushes us back into the dark corner. I really appreciate that about both of our guests today, is that they're willing to be vulnerable with their own story, which then, of course, allows us to become more vulnerable with our own.
I was reading online some studies this weekend about the role that social media has played in us not being vulnerable. You know, we talked about vulnerability a couple, a month or so ago with Paul Nyquist, the president of Moody Bible Institute, and I was really captivated by that idea that our churches today should have more of a sense of vulnerability. And because of Facebook, I can always just put the best parts of my life out there on display and then give an impression that my life is a series of all those best parts instead of the reality that between the best parts are all the hard parts.
There's a new commercial out. I can't remember what cell phone it's for, but it's like a Samsung or something like that. I don't know what it is. But it's a young woman. She's at a concert, and she takes a picture. And the whole point of the commercial is she can manipulate the photo to make it look like she has better seats than she actually does.
Oh, gosh.
I don't know if you've seen this commercial
yet or
not. It's a relatively new commercial. The whole point is tricking her friends into the fact that she has a front row seat. And so she sends the picture out in whatever way, and her friends are receiving it on their phones, and they're like, oh, I can't believe front row. And she's really sitting way in the back. And it just points to that we can become something that we really aren't. We can portray that our life is a certain way, and that social media really drives that as compared to let's have an authentic interaction about how broken we are.
And that there might be a benefit to it than more than just that voyeuristic, here's my hard places, be entertained by the difficult part of my life, or be encouraged that your life's not as hard as mine, or whatever.
Yes, right.
But there's a greater point to all of that, in that my broken places hopefully point to the great healer.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the role that he can play in our stories.
Yeah, some great stuff today. Next week we got some great stuff as well. Bruce Strom's going to be on. He's written a book called Gospel Justice. He says something in the release that God loves lawyers. That's in his release. He's a lawyer. He's writing about kind of what he calls good Samaritan lawyers who are really bringing the gospel justice to the larger justice system. So he'll be with us, and he'll answer that question, I guess.
I know.
Does God love lawyers? I guess that he does. And Chris Vallotton has written a book called Fashion to Reign. We're going to get a little controversial on the show,
Let's
I think.
Let's talk about the role of women
the
in leadership.
The role of women and leadership in the church. He's written a book about that. It's one of those topics that never seems to go away.
No, it does not.
And it's not one that a lot of people find common ground on. They're either on one side or the other. So we're going to talk about it. Hey,
conversation.
That's right. If we're going to spur conversation, heck, let's jump in and spur the conversation. So two really interesting books again next week, authors next week talking about things that will hopefully spur us to talk about them as well.
And really, books are just putting on paper conversations that we hope that people are having in the church, that that there are things that people are learning about, growing about, talking about, experiencing, and then they're putting them out there so that exactly what can happen that is happening, and that's that we would interface with that material, dialogue about it, and then hopefully grow through our understanding of it. So
absolutely.
It's very exciting.
Absolutely. Well, we hope you had a great Saturday. We had a great Saturday talking to some interesting people.
Saturday. Go out now, get your hot cider, your pumpkin latte, someplace other than Starbucks.
Unless you're one of those people, nice people in Dallas, and it's still 90 degrees or something.
Get yourself a nice iced tea.
There you go. Something.
Watch a Dallas Cowboy game.
Something. So we hope you have a great Saturday. We've had a great one. There are two great authors out there to hopefully inspire you, something to
find
to learn
us on
about.
Facebook. Tell us what you thought.
That's exactly right. Hey, this has been Real Life with Beth and Rob. Rob Hall, Beth Kuchenberger, sharing a little bit of your Saturday morning with you. We hope you have a great one. And until next week, have a great Saturday.